Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the 12 Days of Dishmas. I'm Paul Verhoeven.
And I'm Tegan Higginbotham, and my name is still hard to say.
It's ridiculous, but so is mine. Anyway, Tegan, we didn't order turkey by any chance, did we? Was that a big thing that we ordered? Like a huge, huge, expensive turkey?
Yeah, look, guys, here's the thing. I am that person who has never cooked a turkey before, and this year have gone out and spent an awful lot of money on a turkey. And yeah. I mean a profound amount of money. Because I wanted an organic one so I'd feel good about myself as well as full in my tum-tum.
We're going to talk about that particular choice that you've made and that we're living with right now with our guest. You may know him from Better Homes and Gardens, where he's been whipping up incredible delicacies since back in 2003. But Ed Halmagyi is also a renowned chef, author, photographer, and radio host. His latest cookbook, Seasonal Kitchen, was released August this year and is brimming with over 70 recipes. What a show off. Ed is also extremely proud of his Judaism. And on this episode of Dish Island, he's going to explain why Jewish food outdoes Christmas food any day of the week. A bold claim, but one I'm inclined to agree with. He also talks us through how to salvage the driest of birds, the terrible, terrible Christmas turkey. Please welcome Ed Halmagyi. Welcome to Dish Island, Ed. We are doing a Christmas podcast to celebrate the 12 days of Dishmas, and we all know about Christmas food because it's on screen all the time, and it's kind of a, you know, it's a pop cultural staple. It's all we hear about. But I had to ask, are there any Jewish festive foods that you think could go toe-to-toe with traditional Christmas fare that we're eating around this time of year? And I guess what I'm asking is, which holiday would win in a food fight, Hanukkah or Christmas?
It's so easy. I mean, look, you know, as much as the white majority in Australia think that a badly cooked roast chicken and an overly sweet glazed ham is the way to go, let me tell you, Hanukkah is a brilliant idea. Essentially, what it celebrates is an eight-day shortage of supply chain in ancient times, where the Jews responded by saying, "Fuck it, let's eat donuts." You know? I mean, now, Hanukkah's great because Hanukkah, being a celebration of the oil that lasted 8 days, is all about your oily food. So you eat potato latkes, which are like fried potatoes. You eat your donuts, all sorts of, you know, little oily things. At Sukkot, you tend to eat fresh fruits and vegetables. It's a harvest festival. At Shavuot, it's all about the dairy. So there's different times of the year where we sort of get into different kinds of things. But the nice thing about being Jewish is that if you're a hardcore, well, not hardcore, if you're a committed Christian, you've got, what, Christmas and Easter, and they're a couple of months apart. Dude, we get to celebrate every, like, 9 days as a holiday, you know? I remember when I was at school, my Jewish friends, they'd all take every holiday off. It's like, are you still enrolled? What's going on?
Oh my God. My mum was raised Jewish. Her uncle was a rabbi, Rabbi Wolf. Her, you know, grandfather was a very big part of her upbringing. His name was Abraham. And when she moved out to Australia, when she
emigrated... Oh, that's a cartoon. Come on. Abraham and Wolf, you're making this up.
No, that's a private detective agency is what that
yeah.
is.
Abraham and Wolf.
So when she moved out here, she lost connections with a lot of that side. And the one thing she still says and talks about all the time is how much she misses the food. It's not a big part of our life, but if we, you know, if I feel like lots of other cultures jump onto the Christmas thing, or more mm-hmm. to the point, it's rammed down the throats a bit.
You walk into any supermarket already, like, dude,
I know.
It's like November. Get rid of the jingle bells. I can't take it.
Oh man, you are going to be very unwell by the end of December then.
But just on the point that you're making about Jewish food, the thing that you need to remember is that 90-something percent of the Jews in Australia come from what's called the Ashkenazi tradition, which is the European or Eastern European Jews, mostly out of Poland, Lithuania, and Hungary here in Australia. But that's maybe these days it's less than half of the Jewish population in the world. You know, we had a bit of an issue in the 40s.
I heard.
I think it made the books.
Yeah.
Then you've got what's called the Sephardi Jews, who were Jews who were in Spain until, believe it or not, the year 1492. It wasn't just Columbus that year. And they expelled all the Jews. So some went to the Netherlands, a lot went to Turkey, some went to Israel, some went to North Africa. And they've got their own sort of culture of food. It is very Western Mediterranean. And then you have the Mizrahi Jews, who are from Tunisia and Morocco and Egypt and Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan and Yemen and Ethiopia. And their food traditions were deeply Arabic and deeply Mediterranean in their stylings. And they were all there till 1967. After the Six-Day War, they were all given, you know, an invitation to go elsewhere, which they gratefully accepted.
But in terms of, like, okay, so if you've got people who are sitting there going, yeah, sure, it's fried, whatever, and they're kind of a bit skeptical, what are some dishes that you would whip out to just, like, blow their minds, right? To just give them a really interesting cross-section, like a condensed version of how good Jewish food can be around this time of year.
Okay, before we answer that question, let's go through the quick checklist of what you need to know.
Sure.
You all know there's no pork, yeah, and there's no shellfish. If it comes out of the ocean, it's got to have both fins and scales. That's for another moment, because there's a scientific problem with that. But anyway, let's do it. You do realize that octopus and calamari and squid all have scales and fins? Rabbis, what are you doing? If it comes from the land, it's got to have both a split hoof and to its cud, which means cows, goats, and sheep are pretty good. Most other things you probably want to look away when the rabbi comes by. And then basically vegetables and everything, they're all cool. So, you know, if you want to do something like a beautiful piece of Tasmanian boar fish, which is one of my favorite fish in Australia. Light white fish. They don't get too big, but they're spectacular to eat. I dry fillet those, so we never wash them. That way you don't lose any of the flavor. You make up a small marinade of something like pomegranate molasses, celery juice, a little bit of roasted garlic, and some finely ground black sesame seed. The other thing you want to do is to get some dried chilies and a blowtorch, and you char the living, I was going to say bejesus, but that's not appropriate, out of them until they're really ashed, and then grind that up to a powder. And a little bit of this chili ash in there is amazing. And then it's a very fast roast, skin side up with this glaze on it. Beyond amazing. I mean, really beyond amazing. The best of Australian ingredients with a little bit of a Mizrahi kind of flavor. That, compared to your sticky ham, any day of the week.
That does sound so good.
Well, Paul's also of this belief. He thinks that turkey is actually only rolled out at Christmas.
Yeah, by Big Turkey. I think it's a con. I think it's like, it's the only bird. It gets foisted on us once a year. If it was actually good, Ed, my theory is we'd be eating it all the time. What do you think of this?
I bow down at your altar of knowledge. 100%. Is there Big Turkey? Oh, yes. Look, okay, 99% of the time, people go to cook a turkey, particularly at Christmas. It's the very first time they've ever done it. And they go, it's a bit dry. It's like, oh, really? on Christmas Day, I get so many emails and text messages on Christmas Day. The funniest one, I usually get a dozen every year, is, please help, I've roasted my turkey and forgot to take it out of the bag. What can I do?
No.
Oh, seriously. Yeah. Or the other one is, I'm roasting my turkey. It says 4 hours, but it's still rock hard. And so I always message them back saying, is there a chance you didn't defrost it first?
Oh, my God.
It's so funny. Yeah, turkey is, look, when turkey is done really well, it's pretty good. But if you're settling for pretty good on Christmas Day,
the best you could hope for is, like, fine?
Pretty good. Yeah, exactly. And when you're paying, like, $90 to $120 for a turkey at this time of the year, dude, you've been ripped off.
Paul just gave me such a look, because I have just pre-ordered this sort of grain-fed, probably highly educated turkey from our organic butchers, and it has cost $15.
I'm going to bleep that.
Wow. So you're that person.
Oh, I'm that person. Hey.
I walk past them every day on the street and I wonder who they are, but I'm talking to her right now.
We look normal on the outside.
How can you fix that, though? How can you fix it? Okay, so we've
cancel your order. That's how you fix it.
No, it's too late, dude. We've shackled ourselves to this big, big, awful dry bird. As an expert, how would you suggest we kind of pivot this towards good?
Sure. Now, the first thing is you need to ask your butcher or supplier whether or not it's been brined. So brining is a process. In fact, brining works really well with chicken as well if you're going to roast it. And that what it's a matter of is, because turkey is quite dense, the meat's more dense than chicken, it has a lot lower fat content. You need to take a metal skewer and literally poke it all over. And when I say all over, I mean all over. It'll take you 10 minutes. Your holes should be about a centimetre and a half apart.
Wow.
It does two things. Number one, it'll allow the brine to get in. We'll talk about that in a minute. But secondly, by shredding the meat, it gives it the perception of being tender, even when it's not. So with the brine, you're going to do it one part in 10, salt to water. Please don't use iodized table salt, or otherwise it's going to taste like dinner at your grandma after she's lost her sense of taste. Awful. And into that you put some aromatics, bay leaves, allspice, cloves, thyme, whatever you feel like. Really, it's up to you. Do not use, don't use something like onions, because the malic acid in onions tends to give a slightly sour flavor later on. And so you just need to warm that up until the salt's completely dissolved. Cool it down, and I'll be putting the pot into a sink of cold water, and then you immerse the turkey into the brine. Now, how much brine are you going to need? Well, pop your turkey into a pot and see whether it fits. If it fits, great. Then what you need to do is get a tape measure, and what you'll do is you'll measure the width of the pot at the top, right? And I'm assuming it's a straight pot. And then, of course, you'll halve that. So that will give you the radius. And then, as everybody knows, it's simply pi r squared h will give you the volume. But make sure you're doing it in meters and not millimeters. Otherwise, you'll get the wrong factor and you'll need to move your... So have I lost you with the maths? Just make some brine, dude!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
How deep do you go with these kind of small Hellraiser incisions in the turkey flesh?
And like it's like being a serial killer until you hit bone. So you need to, the further you penetrate, the further the brine will penetrate. Now you need to leave it in the fridge, which can be problematic if you don't have a second fridge. But if you don't, what you do is you get a garbage bin, preferably not too dirty, and fill it with ice. Right, okay. And then put a lid on the thing and leave it overnight. It has to be in overnight. So that goes in from about midday on Christmas Eve until, are you doing lunch or dinner?
I think it's going to be probably like, I would say late afternoon,
yeah,
evening.
Yeah, it's going to be those, for some reason.
Half-pissed, lazy lunch. Okay,
yeah,
got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
So midday to midday. At midday, the next day, you'll take it out, pat it dry. Do not rinse it. I'll say it again. Do not rinse it. You want that salt on it. Now you don't need to season it, right? Are you making a stuffing?
Yes,
it's terrible.
And there's,
no,
there's,
do the
no?
stuffing separately. You do not put the stuffing inside a turkey. It will come out absolutely rubbish, wet and horrible. What you do is you make your stuffing as you would normally, make it into a log, and then wrap that in greaseproof or baking paper, and then wrap that in two or three layers of foil. And that only needs about 40 minutes to bake, but you do it separately, and then you have these lovely slices rather than those sloppy spoonfuls that everyone actually leaves on the side of the plate. I mean, if you're making something that people are going to ignore, that's not called cooking, that's called punishment. So as far as your turkey's concerned, make sure you're cooking it on a rack above a roasting pan. If it's sitting in the pan, the bottom bit is going to have the texture of porridge. So make sure the stuff has somewhere to go, the juices have somewhere to drip. Make sure there's about a centimetre of water in the drip tray right through the baking. You want to start it at about 230 degrees, rubbed with a little bit of oil. Again, don't bother seasoning it. 230 degrees, give it half an hour. You probably think to yourself, oh, geez, that sounds insane. It's not. What it's actually doing is it's cauterizing the skin, which will lock in as much moisture as is possible. Mm. Then you're going to drop it down to 180 degrees. At that point, you're going to cover it with foil, two, three layers of foil, and leave it in there for 2.25 hours, right?
Wow.
At that point, take the foil back off and give it another half hour. And that's it. So it's 3.25 hours for a size 50 turkey. If it's a little bit smaller, the sizes with turkeys, by the way, each size number represents 500 grams. It represents 100 grams, sorry.
Right.
So
right.
A size 50 is 5 kilos. If you've got a size 44, it'll be 4.4 kilos. So you do need to find it. If the turkey has already been pre-brined, brining it again will give you about the kind of result you would get from being entirely uneducated about cooking turkey, because it will come out drier than you'd imagine. Saltier than you can stand,
yeah,
and just hope that your mother-in-law is there and just Would you like an extra portion, love? Hey, why are they called turkeys?
Why are they called turkeys?
Where are they from? They come from Guatemala.
What?
So when work with me here. Spanish go to Central America, to Mexico, and they find this thing called huarahul. Huarahul, which sounds like Guatemala, doesn't it, is what the Mexicans called the bird because it came from Guatemala. And the Spanish go, oh, this is really cool. And they take a breeding pair of those back and present it to the King of Spain. And he goes, they're beautiful. And he puts them in his garden. And they breed and multiply. And then they kind of escape the garden. And before you know it, in about 30 years, the whole of the south of Spain is covered in these animals. Now, the Spanish didn't eat them. They thought it was a decorative animal. And so the Moors in the south of Spain, who are the North Africans, they went, oh, no, these are pretty good. So before too long, they've sent some, you know, probably by express post across the Strait of Gibraltar to their friends and family in Morocco. And then it goes to Algeria. Then it goes to Tunisia, into Libya, into Egypt, into what was then Palestine, and then up into Turkey. Now, that went from sort of 1480 through about 1550. In 1550, the Turks have it, which is just when they were invading Europe. And so they go all the way across to Western Hungary, where the Western nations beat them at a battle. And they captured this thing that the Turks were eating. It was this really large bird, and they called it a Turkish hen. And so they took it back to Paris and presented it to King Charles and said, look what we have found for you, my king. It is a breeding pair of the most beautiful birds. And the King Charles of France said, oh, it is magnificent. I'm going to send some to my beautiful cousin, King Ferdinand in Spain. So they sent a breeding pair down to Spain, and the Spanish king took one look and said, what the f*** is this? We've already got these. So it went all the way around the Mediterranean, and it was a Turkish hen. There you go.
It was also the first story of official Christmas re-gifting, which I really like.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, how have I missed that all these years?
There's nothing worse than when you get given a bird that looks like a pair of testicles, you give it away, it travels around Europe and then comes back to you. It's just,
just tougher.
Well, so even here in Australia, you know, you get the brush turkeys, which are a megapode. Mm. They have a ball sack under their mouth, right? That's just, they just do.
Ed, I've got to say, we normally prepare about 300 questions for our guests in case they don't have much to say. We got through half a question with you. We could do a fucking TED talk. This is amazing. But listen, Ed, we need to find out what your Desert Island Christmas dishes. So you are trapped on our island now, and you can only bring one Christmas dish with you. But you know what? Let's extend it, right?
Okay.
Let's extend it out to, you know,
Hanukkah is in there.
Hanukkah's in there. So any kind of festive food, what's the one festive dish?
I have one question to ask you. I'm assuming that there is three-phase power and a freezer on the island.
Yes.
Of course there is. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got freezer facilities for certain.
Excellent. And you've also got a really good Carpigiani ice cream churn because, you know, what island would be complete without a 1 litre, 6 minute ice cream churn? We would be making my cassia burnt honey and ajuan ice cream, which is just amazing. And the reason I throw ajuan into this is because it starts a conversation, which you're about to ask me, what the f*** is ajuan? Ajuan is a seed that comes from eastern Israel into Jordan. It's a beautiful, lightly sour, kind of sharp spice. The nearest thing I know to it would be Australian mountain pepper, very similar sort of flavour profile. Mm. But see, the great thing about it is we char the cassia first, so it's got a bit of a smoky flavour, crumble that, put it into the milk for the infusion. Then we reduce the amount of sugar that's required by using honey. Honey's interesting because it's actually a thing called a hygroscopic sugar, so it stays tender. The ice cream stays tender. It doesn't ice up. It's really interesting. A little bit of ajuan. Like, you won't really taste the ajuan, but when you put it on the label, all the people who eat this, who come to my desert island, they're going to go, oh my God, it was so amazing. I went out to dinner at this new restaurant, and I had for dessert was ajuan ice cream. I haven't seen that anywhere. I'm so impressed. Have you tried it? Of course you haven't tried it. Because let's face it, going out to restaurants is 90% showing up your friends. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, this is a dish that I don't think nobody's going to bring it. That's the whole point. That's why you've brought it, and I love it.
But listen, you're absolutely right. And for everyone listening who's thinking, how do you host a dinner party? Only one of the dishes you serve should be flamboyant. Everything else should be really easy for you. But there should be one thing on the menu that no one knows how to cook. That's how you make it memorable. And lots of good wine.
we really cannot thank you enough for being stranded here with us, Ed. It's been an absolute pleasure. And also, you just saved Christmas. You genuinely saved this terrible dry bird. So thank you.
Well, from the rabbis to your ears.
If you ever release an album, that has to be the name. But thanks, Ed, thanks for coming to Dish Island.
It's a great pleasure. And anytime you want to row on over to my part of the island, I'll be waiting for you. Ice cream in hand.
Paul, what a roller coaster of emotions. I've gone from regretting my life decisions to now looking for a salt bath.
I think it's like the stages of grieving, you know? I went through denial about having a turkey, and then I went through some bargaining and some depression and acceptance, and then brining, which of course is the most important part of the grieving process.
Tomorrow we have another incredible guest. She's an author who I've looked up to for a very long time.
She's very tall.
She's gigantic. But I would also be very surprised if you don't have one of her books on your shelf. We're talking about Pip Drysdale, and she has a desert island dish that is...
weird.
So, no.
It's weird.
No, it's not weird. I think a lot of people are going to really dig this desert island dish.
It's a bit weird, but you know what? Doesn't matter. Her books are so good, it makes up for it. No, I applaud a bold choice, and Pip's choice is pretty bold. If you want to hear what it is, you're going to have to tune in tomorrow. How's that for a tease? So make sure you tune in to tomorrow's episode of the 12 Days of Dishmas. I'm Paul. That's Tegan. Have a great day, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.